Hello, everyone. Welcome into another episode of Kentucky Daily, a daily podcast covering your University of Kentucky Wildcats. I'm Sean Smith. He's Derek Terry, and it is now Mailbag Monday. Derek, on the football side of things.
It is. Back at it. Hope you guys listened to the post-game episode yesterday. Go download that if you haven't. But we're back at it on Monday answering your football questions. Looking forward to seeing what we can discuss today.
Yeah, and a couple of things before we get started here. Obviously, Kentucky, LSU Saturday at Kroger Field, 7:30 kick on the SEC Network. SEC Nation will be in town for that. And we also can go ahead and say Kentucky, Georgia will be the CBS game of the week on October 16th in Athens, a 3:30 kick. Derek, a big-time spot for this program.
Yeah, I thought that was I had looked at the slate for that weekend, I think last week, and after the South Carolina game. And I had figured as long as Kentucky took care of business against Florida, well, I'll say it that way, as long as they beat Florida, I wouldn't say take care of business, but as long as they beat Florida, they would have had a great shot at that. So I think that was easily, in terms of implications as to what it could mean to a division, it's really the only game, I think, in the SEC that weekend that could have a direct impact. And again, the way Georgia's playing, I don't know that anyone's going to be able to beat those guys until maybe Alabama in the SEC championship game. But regardless, if UK were to pull the upset, it will be in the most desired TV slot you can have in the SEC. So a big opportunity, no doubt, for the program.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and just dive into this mailbag. It's football only. So if there's basketball questions, we will do a basketball mailbag at some point here very soon, and we're going to throw all these basketball questions into it. But the bulk of this has been football. So let's start with this question from Ben. What is the ceiling of this team if the offense starts clicking again? I mean, we've seen what this defense can do if they get that offense going at all. And if you watch Van Hiel's Twitter breakdowns, Derek, they're close on some plays. And I think that it is becoming a thing that they just need more time in this system to really get acclimated to it and get used to it. You're starting to see some execution on some big plays. Like the play where Wandell scored a touchdown, the execution was perfect. And then Wandell goes and makes a great play like he does. But he doesn't have that chance to make that play without Kavassier Smoke's block and some others. Yeah. So they're executing some plays, but they're also just a fraction off on some plays as well that I think that you mentioned it yesterday. Those final five games of the season, I think you could see the offense really take off.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ceiling is, you know, I think Ben might have asked the question that we discussed, whether it was more realistic that they would go 11-1 or beat Georgia. So I'm kind of like coming full circle on this question because I do think, like, theoretically, if they were to really start clicking on offense, and you would think, I'm just going to be blunt. I really don't see them beating Georgia. I just don't think – I don't know that anyone is this year. So any other game, like, yeah, I don't see any other reason that if the offense is playing very well, that they couldn't beat everyone else on their schedule. It's not me saying they'll go 11-1, but if you're looking for the ceiling, if they're clicking in all phases, which they have not done yet this season, it's been, you know – I mean, I guess against Louisiana Monroe they did, but since that first week, it's kind of been – not a full game put together up from both sides, plus special teams. I mean, you have a couple units, depending on the game, that really steps up and helps them out. Against Missouri, the offense was clicking. And then the last two games, really the defense has played great. So, I mean, it would have to be 11-1, right? I don't know that they're going to consistently be able to do enough to actually get to 11 wins. But, yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I mean, hell, I guess the
– it's in play.
Yeah, I mean, we got another question later where I'll dig a little bit more into what I think the final record might look like. But that's a good question from Ben, and I think it's probably the question everyone's asking right now is if these guys all click at the same time, like, how good could they be? And they're 5-0 despite that, which I think you probably have to be thrilled about.
You have to. Absolutely. I'm going to group these two questions together. One's from Lane. What is it going to take to get the offense going efficiently? And then UK Shane, why can we not throw the ball? The quarterback looks like he's just a little off. Need to use the tight ends more. So I just grouped those two together. Eric, I think the efficiency goes back to what I said on the first question. I think that they're still getting to a point to where they're learning the system. They're getting more game reps. I mean, it's different when you scheme it up during the week and then you get out there on Saturday and have to do it in live speed against SEC athletes. But I think, too, how much do you think it plays into it that, you know, Liam Cohen is still finding his footing as an offensive coordinator? And maybe as he gets more experience in this, maybe this offense gets better as well, that it's not just a one-way street here. Maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I mentioned it yesterday. I mean, Cohen, you know, really at this level, it's his first time running the show. Levis, the same deal. I mean, I know he had experience at Penn State, but this is his first time as a starter going through the grind of, you know, preparing for different teams week in and week out. Florida's defense has been pretty good this year. LSU's defense, maybe less so versus what you would maybe expect from an LSU defense. They've probably not been as good as you would think, but they're not horrible by any means. I mean, it's going to be another challenge. You know, they're going to have great athletes, guys who can disrupt the game. I mean, that's going to be the case when you play a team like that's going to be the case for the next 2 weeks. I mean, Georgia to an extent that they will not see again this season. I mean, honestly, they're kind of trending in towards an all-time defense right now. So, I mean, you go back-to-back shutouts in the league. I don't care who you play. That's ridiculous. And so that's going to be a tough week. And that's kind of why I've been pinpointing post-Georgia as a way to kind of evaluate this offense. But this should be a game, though. I think that, you know, I just saw the tweet that LSU was last in defending the pass in the SEC this year. This season. So, like, you got to take advantage of that. And, you know, in terms of the passing game, I don't know about the whole throw it to the tight ends more. I will say I am surprised that the tight ends haven't been more involved. But again, involved. I mean, Stoops talked about it today. 40, what they run, Sean? 47 plays? Is that what we decided they ran yesterday once we got the stats figured out?
47 or 46, one of those two.
That's just not very many plays. I mean, you cannot
really – and they still won a game against Florida.
Yeah. You can't really spread the ball around, though, and get more people involved. And that's – I mean, they had, 11 drives. So you're basically – what the math on that is, like, basically four plays a drive, even though they had two scoring drives. They just did not really sustain anything, and that makes it harder to get the ball to anybody, especially when you can carve out probably – oh, I don't know how many times they ran the ball the other night, but, well, I guess I can figure it out. They ran 47 plays, threw it 17 times. I guess they had 30 rushes. So that's – in terms of the passing game, you can book that more often than not they're going to attempt more rushes than passes. So, I mean, you got to take advantage whenever you do have passing downs and good situations. So in terms of Levis, last night I watched a little bit of the Florida game. I watched it all, but I went back to earlier in the season, UL Monroe and then Missouri. I didn't get past those two games, but I just kind of went through the highlights, and you can tell, Sean, and I encourage our listeners to do so as well. Like, the in the pocket to start the season, there was kind of a calmness from Levis that does not exist now. The first completion, I think it was to Josh Ali. I mean, his feet are frantic in the pocket against Florida. He just does not look very calm right now. He looks very amped up. And I think he's going to go through a phase where, you know, he's got to work through that. And when he works through that and gets his feet set, I mean, he can be as talented as anyone out there with his arm. I mean, his arm strength is crazy. We all see that, but they gotta figure some stuff out. And I've not gotten to watch Ben Hiles' videos yet. I know you mentioned those. I'd like to go check those out to see what he has to say. But you do sense, though, from Stoops some of the same things you were talking about, though. I mean, he truly seems to think that they're close to putting it together.
The play to McLean on third down was so close to being a big play. When you go watch Van's highlight, I don't know if you can pull up his Twitter there and watch it as we're recording, as I read the next question, Derek, but he was talking about how McLean didn't hold that block a second. If he holds it a second longer, then he ends up letting Kenneth Horsey to get on that backer, and then there's a seam there for McLean to have a big play. So that, and we're talking about a kid too that hadn't played. That was his first snap of the season. So, you know, he's amped up.
Yeah.
And he's excited to kind of get out there and get moving. But I expect this execution to get better week to week. I do think that they were better. You mentioned Levis's arm strength, the throw to Bates on the boundary that Wandell was like, wait, was that for me? And it just blows by him to the corner. That's the stuff that we're talking about, that there is talent in Will Levis's game. It's just now about getting comfortable and getting those feet set. And I think, too, adding in some runs here and there. Yeah. He made a really good decision there on the play before Wandell scores the touchdown to tuck it and go when he went through his progressions, and he came up with a positive play. I told you, I said, those are huge plays. If you can get positive plays on first down against good teams, you're going to have some success. But I didn't even know that this was a question when I brought up Liam Cohen. But we had a DM question from Steven. You guys touched on it in the recap, but I think the issues on offense lie primarily with Cohen being a rookie play caller. I noticed Saturday night that he didn't appear to be adjusting to what Florida was offering and instead was following a plan. In my opinion, Wandell and Rodriguez should have received a majority of the touches until Florida proved they could stop them, then used his decoys to open up the offense. Instead, Cohen seemed intent on spreading the ball around unnecessary, which bogged down the offense. I didn't even know that was a question when I threw that out.
Yeah, I don't have the targets pulled up. I do agree there's a bit of a lull between when Robinson had the touchdown to his next touch. I mean, I think, you know, they got to get him the ball.
Would you like to see more jet sweeps and stuff to him just to get him the ball? Yeah, to Wandell. Not like handoffs in the back. I mean, you don't want to turn him into running back the way Nebraska did, but what do you think about some of those jet sweeps that he made a big play on against Missouri and some things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so. I like what they did. He had two. I think his second catch was more of a true screen, but his third catch was one where it was just him one-on-one, and they ripped it out to him really quick. And he just, you know, I mean, if a team is going to give you that like Florida did, that's a first down all day. I mean, he's not going to get tackled one-on-one by the first guy that he sees, you know, like he was basically able to just catch. And then, you know, he got knocked out of bounds. They had the 15 yards added to it. I like those looks. Well,
I texted you this morning too. Stoops gets really upset when Will misses one of those throws out of the backfield. If you go back and watch the game, the one to Smoke, Will, like, Stoops was very upset with someone, and it appeared to be Will because that's where he was directing it, that maybe he thought he had too much on the ball or it was behind him a little bit. So obviously, Derek, I think maybe we're seeing Levis make these throws in practice, and then it's just not happening in the game because he's so amped up and so sped up that I think Stoops just sees how good this offense could be if they could just execute those, just that one thing, get the ball out, have it be a good throw, or make that one block. I mean, football is a game of inches here, Derek. And if you're a fraction off, somebody's tackling you, especially in this league.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, he's probably getting so frustrated because at this level, those like have to be gimme throws. He cannot. I mean, that's two times of Smoke last game. They didn't.
Those complete. Were the throws Kentucky was good at a couple of years ago, right?
For a little while. I mean, I'd see that's kind of the thing. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. You know, Levis has had some struggles throwing the ball, you know, in the intermediate game. But I mean, you gotta have that. I mean, you cannot have against good defenses. It's just not going to be boom or bust where you just chuck it 40 yards downfield and someone comes down with it. I mean, they've not actually completed a very long pass in two straight games, right? I mean, not since Chattanooga. They've not had a ball downfield completed. They got to get that back. But, you know, if there's nothing that you have to really worry about as a defense over the middle, then I think it makes it much easier to drift back in coverage and be prepared for those deep shots. So we just got to keep seeing how it comes along for sure.
Let's just stay in the DMs here because we have two more, or three more actually. I have two more in requests than one that I've accepted. This one comes from Tim. On Kentucky's last possession at 3rd and 2, they decided to throw when we needed to burn clock. Why not run the ball in that situation? Do you remember that play exactly?
Yeah, it was a rollout. More so than just running clock. I mean, it's more important. And I assume the question saying that they think UK has a better chance to get a first down if they run it. But, I mean, what they're trying to do right there is pick up the first down. And even though – was it an incomplete pass? I guess it was, wasn't it? He tried to throw it out to, and it did stop the clock. But, you go back and they tried Wildcat on 4th and 2, but they got stuffed up the middle. So I think they thought there a chance would be, and then Cohen explained it after the game. The idea was you would give Levis a chance to run or pass out there. And of course, he ended up getting hit before he could dump it off. But, I mean, there was still, I think just right at 5 minutes left. So it was going to take, to me, that was just not a situation yet where it was just undoubtedly run the ball. I mean, Florida had all three timeouts. Even if you pick up a first down after on a run, you're still going to have to, you know, if you run a couple more plays, and Florida still stops them. I mean, Florida can still have 3 minutes or so to have the ball. So, I mean, it was not a situation yet, in my opinion, where running clock was more important than potentially just getting a first down. And I think that they decided that that rollout that I don't believe they've run all season was the best play to try to get it. And, you know, Cohen said it was a bad call afterwards. But I actually think maybe not to his left like that, but I do think involving him in some more bootlegs, giving him that option to run or pass.
He did not look comfortable going to the left, did he, on that
one? No, he didn't. And that play looked weird too because Bates was kind of – or not Bates. Rigg was all like kind of by himself. But he didn't throw it to him. It's almost like – and they had like two guys in the same spot. It was just – it looked like someone didn't do something right on that play. It just – it looked very odd.
Staying in the DMs here, Sam says, key takeaways for me were only allowing 2 sacks and only having 1 turnover. And I will say this about sacks. I know for sure one of them was on Levis. He held on to it way too long. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't an offensive line. That was more of a coverage thing. Those are huge stats. And do you think there are legitimate issues within the offense or just too easy to scheme against with it being either a run or Wandale over the top? He also says, I was at the game. I've been to South Carolina and the Swamp. This was 10 times louder than any atmosphere I've ever been a part of the entire game.
Well, I think you deserve you and everyone else who was there. Man, it was a great atmosphere, and you deserve a lot of credit for affecting the game. I don't think the offense is super easy to plan against. I think right now a lot of problems are coming on UK's end. I mean, maybe it's too easy, but like I do think a lot of the problems right now starts at quarterback. I mean, and it's not me saying you don't need to bench Will Levis or anything like that. He's just kind of going through it right now, and I think Cohen could help him out a little bit more with maybe getting some easy throws to start game. I don't personally love, I know Dan Orlovsky or I think that's who's calling the game. He liked the deep shot to start the game. I really don't. Like I never played behind. Quarterback. Yeah, I never played quarterback, but to me, like that's a very low percentage throw to connect on anyway. And I just kind of like starting off a quarterback with some easy throws, try to get him into a rhythm. But everyone's different. I mean, maybe Levis felt more comfortable throwing the ball deep. He's had more success doing that, it seems like, this year than throwing those easier routes. But just doing some other things like that. And, you know, I just think even from Stoops' comments about recruiting skill position guys, getting guys who can change the scoreboard, I think it's very apparent still that they're just lacking at wide receiver outside of Wandale. And I don't think there's a ton of confidence in anyone. And I know Levis wouldn't admit this, but you know, that's going to be his first read. Probably
every play.
Any pass play that is specifically not designed to somebody else, it's probably going to be Wandale. And, you know, I just think he's got to continue to grow as a quarterback. I just think that's what they're going through right now. But this should be a defense this weekend that they can take advantage of through the year. They should be able to hit on some big passing plays this weekend. I'd like to see someone else step up and make some plays. I know they tried that deep pass to start the game to Epps. Epps seemed to be open. When I watched the replay on the interception in real time, I didn't – like, he did need to get it a little higher because there was a linebacker, but obviously just sold it way too much. But that's a pass, so that can absolutely be completed, and that could have gone to Epps for a first down. So you just got to keep developing, keep figuring out what Levis is good at. I mean, again, we're just 5 games through. And if you view this thing through a longer-term lens, assuming Cohen and Levis are back next year, I mean, you're talking about minimum, because I think they're certainly going to be a bowl team next year as well. You could be talking about just 5 games into a potential 26-game career for Levis. So it's still in the early end, but definitely want to start seeing some progress here soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ezra says this is more of a statement than a question. One Saturday night was the best. Fine. One Saturday night was the best night of my life, and everyone deserves a field storming at least once in their life. 2, Josh Pascal might play his way into a round 2 draft pick. And 3, Marquise Maben is the most delusional Louisville radio host and a complete airbag. So,
don't even know who that is.
I don't either.
That's no offense to the guy he's talking about. I don't have a comment there on that. Pascal was tremendous. Absolutely a great player. He's another one of those guys I think will probably end up in the Senior Bowl at the end of the year.
So tremendous that Jacquez Jones got SEC Defensive Player of the Week and Pascal gets Special Teams Player of the Week. I actually thought there was a chance that both would be co-defensive players of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a huge performance from both those guys. But Pascal in particular, I mean, so disruptive. Just a tremendous game. Yeah, he was that was the preseason All-SEC Josh Pascal that people saw. And that's what he, I think, could have been last year before that knee injury really slowed him down. But he is someone, especially this weekend, who has a chance, I think, to be really disruptive again. I mean, LSU ran for 33 yards against Auburn.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Auburn's had a pretty good defense. They typically do, but 33 yards, though, I mean, that's crazy. And, I mean, UK's run defense has been so good. It's kind of funny. I mean, really, outside of the Chattanooga game, they've been really fantastic stopping the run. And, well, for the most part, I mean, Florida, you know, they're going to get yards in the run game just with the way it's designed. I think Emory Jones ended up being their leading rusher. Not sure how many yards it was under 200 though, right? Because I think they threw for over 200 and they only had 382. So really a good job stopping the run. And, you know, tough to predict week to week how things are going to go, but on paper, I think you would feel really good about UK's matchup up front against these guys, even with Marquand McCall out. I don't think we've mentioned that yet on this show, have we?
No, we have not.
He's going to be out a few weeks. So, you know, we got Justin Rogers and Josiah Hayes. Big assignments for these guys. But, man, Sean, when you really think about it, they basically played the entire last game anyway because McCall got hurt so early in the game.
And when he says a few weeks, we don't really know that exact number, but I'm just going off of Derek maybe after the bye week.
That's what I'm thinking. I think he's for sure out until the bye. I mean, unless he has a very fast recovery and maybe he can give him something against Georgia. But that – for the guys that are banged up right now, that seems like, you know, if you're too hurt to play this weekend, then I don't know that they're going to be. I mean, I'm UK's going to do everything they can to beat Georgia. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they're not, but to beat a good Georgia team though, or maybe a great Georgia team, like you're going to need to play the guys that give you the best chance. And if it's either having Josiah Hayes and Justin Rogers at 100% or Marquand McCall like 70%, I think you probably need to go with the guys that are fully rested and healed up and can give you the best shot to win.
Looks like we have 6 questions left. This one's from Richard. Does the team watch the SEC short skits?
As a team, like I'd say probably not, but I have no idea.
I don't either. I mean, those are funny though. I haven't watched.
Yeah, they are.
I haven't watched this week. Have you watched this week? I know I watched one with Georgia and Alabama in the principal's office.
I haven't. No, I've not watched this week.
But I've not watched. I didn't see anything about Kentucky. And then Jordan says, when are you reserving your plane tickets to Atlanta? I'm not flying to Atlanta from Middlesboro. That's like a 4-hour drive. But when am I reserving my hotel for Atlanta? For Atlanta. I can't even talk. For Atlanta?
Where are you from?
Probably that day of the last SEC game. That's what I'm going to say. What do you think, Derek? You think some Kentucky fans are looking at that weekend and saying, man, what do I have going on that weekend? Because there's a chance I might be in Atlanta. Or do you think that, I mean, I'm sure someone out there has probably already booked something, right?
I mean, most hotels, at least fans, the way I book, they're
fans get national championship tattoos before the NCAA tournament starts. I'm assuming somebody's booked a hotel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most, like, if you go, for me, and going through Marriott as a member, like, they're very easy to cancel. So you could reserve one. Just, I think I reserved one in 2018 just with because, you know, after that Missouri game, I mean, it was literally if they beat Georgia, they made it. So I went ahead and booked one and it was easy to cancel later. Still a little early, I would say. But I mean, if they win this weekend and then beat Georgia, you would think they're would probably, you know, win the SEC East. But again, that's getting way ahead of ourselves. But yeah, like you, I will not be flying to Atlanta. It's too short of a drive. And I go through my hometown on the way home anyway, so I'll probably stop in there.
I think the goal for Kentucky fans right now should be to sell out Vanderbilt Stadium with blue.
Man, do you think they'll be able to get tickets for $1, like that UConn game? I don't know if you saw that. They were going for $1. Yeah.
Can you imagine the price of $1? That's what I saw that tweet. But can you imagine if Kentucky fans sold out Vandy Stadium? Like, let's say Kentucky's on a path to 11-1, or even, let's just say it, 12-0. Like, do you think Kentucky fans just start this thing? Like, let's sell out their stadium, and then it turns an SEC stadium into another stadium that's for the
other team. That game's on November 13th, so it'll be after the Tennessee game and after Mississippi State. It'll be interesting to see where the team is at that point because, you know, they got these next 4 games. You got LSU, who is shoot, man, they're probably struggling more than any of those teams I just mentioned at this point. Georgia is obviously going to be a very daunting task. And then you get the bye week, but you come back with Tennessee. You come back with Mississippi State, right? And then Tennessee.
Yeah.
So Mississippi State just knocked off A&M. Their only loss, I think, is to Memphis, right? Did they have it? No, they might have had another loss in there. Let me pull up their old schedule. Either way, they just beat A&M. So, I mean, they're coming off a win. Yeah, they lost to LSU. I forgot about that. I was actually watching. I think I like watched the whole game, and I forgot about it. So, you know, they're coming off. They had two close losses, though. They lost a 2 to Memphis on a controversial call, basically. Beat NC State, who beat Clemson. I'm not even going to get into this whole transitive property thing this year because it's wild. But they had to come back in their season opener. They were down big, came back, snuck one out against Louisiana Tech. And then they've had a 2-point loss and a 3-point loss and then a 4-point win. So they're playing a lot of close games this year. But it's a spot Kentucky's not won in a long time. We talked about it 08. And then Tennessee. I mean, these are 4 tough games. You know, Tennessee just looked great. I don't think that's like who Tennessee is per se. Like, I don't think you have to worry about them showing up and scoring 60 points every time they go out there. But still, it's an offense that, you know, throughout Heupel's career, he's produced good offenses, and you got to expect that they'll come in and score some points. So who knows what Kentucky's offense will look like though at that point. So by the time you do roll around to that Vanderbilt game, I'll be really curious to kind of see where they are, kind of the mood of the team by then.
And Walker says, how much does a win like that help recruiting? I'll answer that one, Derek. When you get an environment like that going and you tee it up and you finish it and you see the emotion, you see the energy from that stadium, that is how you land big time recruits, because it's the, not only does the fans affect the game, the fans also affect the opinion of these kids that come sit in that stadium and watch these games. They see that, okay, how do I chalk up this visit compared to this visit? Okay, Kentucky's just as rowdy as school A, B, and C. And then they get to see that experience for themselves. It only helps, especially when you complete it and win it. We've seen really good environments pay off in recruiting. This was a really good environment that was capped off with a victory. Those are even bigger.
Yeah, I definitely think it carries some weight when you beat Florida. I mean, anytime. And to do it in the way that they did with that environment, you can tell it's already paid off because they're getting a commitment on Friday from Caden Worman, who's a 3-star out of Franklin County, who they played against Corbin earlier this year. So I reached out to my friend who's on the staff at Corbin, and he had a lot of good things to say about that young man. So that's already paying off with an in-state kid who has an offer from Wisconsin, but he's going to be making his announcement Friday. It's important that they get the stadium the same way this weekend. I know it doesn't have the same kind of importance in terms of snapping a streak, you know, beating a team that they've been really close at home against, but it's LSU. And you think about, I mean, this is a team 2 years ago won the national championship. Like, these kids, and that's why, like, we hadn't really gotten into this and I won't spend all day on it, but like, after, you know, we talked about how much they put into beating Missouri and how they came out sluggish the next week, it's a lot different getting up for LSU versus a team like Chattanooga. So yes, even though they just had a huge win, I would worry a lot less about a hangover, because I think they realize what's in front of them. And I think you realize that even though LSU is 3-2, if you don't come out ready to play, you could still get, you know, beat pretty soundly by a team with that kind of talent. It can get away from you. So I think if the crowd comes back out strong this weekend, you got the headliner in Emil Wagner, who's supposed to be there, you know, highly rated 4-star offensive tackle, Ahmad's little brother. It'll be the second time he's been there this year. So, I mean, I think you talk about him maybe getting closer to a decision. And then Dane Key, who was there again, saw videos of him celebrating on the field after the game, you know, Lexington kid. I mean, they could be close to going on a little bit of a run right here. And any time that you get those guys in the stadium and show them a good atmosphere, I think it's only going to make it easier to get those kids to come to UK.
And now looking at David's question, after watching the 3 past SEC games, what's the most important recruiting areas needed going forward? Minor wide receivers and pass rushers. I think David probably answered that question himself there.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I think wide receivers, number one. They just got to keep getting better there. And I think you're going to see the transfer portal help there as well. Because if they don't go to the transfer portal, they're going to be pretty young next year, because I'm assuming all of Epps, Ali, and Robinson will be gone next season. So you're talking about I don't know if you'd even have a true senior at that point who's on the roster right now. And then you would really have no experienced guys who have to this point. I mean, you always see guys towards the end of the season sometimes start to come on. So I don't want to say that the top three receivers from the team will be gone, because perhaps someone could break into that by next year. Pass rushers, you know, they are addressing that in recruiting. They got Tyrese Fearby committed and Keaton Wade, two guys off the edge that I think will play a big role in that. But also I would say another area that you could probably use, if the right player became available in the portal, you could probably use a more experienced guy, at least as a, I don't want to call him a placeholder, but just so you don't have to force those young guys into action. Cause it's just tough to ask a true freshman to be, you know, stellar as a true freshman. So I'm trying to think if there's anywhere else I would say that's desperately needed. I mean, they're doing a pretty good job in most areas. So those probably are the most glaring, I would agree.
And then Brandon says, I have a feeling we can go 11-1. I worry about LSU and Mississippi State, but both teams can't run the ball. Derek, I actually thought of this morning, and you and I talked about it last night. If Georgia goes unbeaten through the regular season, and let's just say Alabama does too, they get to the SEC title game, one of them loses, so one's going to be 12-1, the other one's going to be 13-0. Both teams are going to the playoff, especially if that game's close. Let's just say Kentucky's 11-1. What's the SEC look like then if they've got 2-1 loss teams and an undefeated team? Let's just throwing it out there, just hypotheticals here.
I don't see any scenario that three SEC teams would get in. I mean,
can you imagine, though, if the league can flex its muscles, though, and just say we have 2 1-loss teams and one undefeated team?
Yeah, and if one of those teams is UK, then I think people are definitely going to remember this season as an 07 type that was just out of this world crazy, because I don't think I can even wrap my head around that.
It's not entirely impossible, though. When you look at this, it's not. But there's still a lot of work to be done. There's still a ton of work to be done.
But the way they're playing right now, offensively, they will not win 11 games. Like playing the way I mean, they've done a great job to get to where they are, but that's going to run. Like you gotta get a more total team.
They got to score points to beat Tennessee.
Yeah.
And some of these other teams.
And Mississippi State.
Yep. Yeah. Like if you had to rank these games difficult, you know, most difficult to least difficult, honestly, LSU is kind of down the list for me. I think Mississippi State might be one of – obviously, Georgia's one. I'm going to say Mississippi State 2, Tennessee 3, and possibly LSU 4, honestly. That's how I would rank them.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I'm not really sure how I'd rank. I mean, I don't want to – the thing with Tennessee, regardless, like, you know, you're going to have to score points.
That's why I think it's going to be harder, because of the way the offense is playing right now.
Yeah. Well, I think the good news for UK, and something that's always, you know, theoretically should keep it in games, is they've still been able to run the ball effectively. And the defense is pretty good. So, you know, I don't expect – if the defense is in a spot where they give up 35 to 40 points or something against Tennessee, that's going to be a really hard game to win, I think. Yeah. But if you keep them in that kind of 28 or under range, then I think any – if UK can keep teams around there, they're going to win a lot of games this year. I mean, and they haven't given up more than 28, right? That was the most they gave up. Yeah. It was against Missouri. So –
last question, or you finished, or you want to?
I mean, I just LSU. I mean, I think just the talent. It's, even though they're not playing great this year, and I don't think Ed Orgeron's a very good coach, it seems like their offensive coordinator is in a lot of hot water with how the season's going. But that's going to be a hard game, I still think, you know, to be able to beat a team like LSU. And it would be even if they are a little bit down, it would be a tremendous statement to beat Florida and LSU back-to-back weeks,
absolutely.
Those are both teams on paper that were much more highly thought of than UK entering the season.
And to start 4-0 in the SEC, that's huge.
Yeah, when was the last time that happened? Because they lost to A&M, right, in 2018. I think they started 4-0.
It's definitely not in our lifetime.
Or no, sorry, it was – who'd they beat? They beat Florida, Mississippi State, South Carolina. Yeah.
Which leads us into our final question. I think it's a really good one. Tyler says, having played 5 games now, can you reassess what success is for this season? For me, Derek, now that it's 5-0, you can't go 7-5. You can't go 8-4. After you've beaten Florida and started 5-0, I don't even know if nine is success, but I think taking that next step is to get to 10. Given the schedule that they have the rest of the way, you're going to tee it up again this week against LSU at home. You have to finish that one off. I think 10 is what I put it at, is what really moves the program forward, but nine is success.
Yeah, I feel really confident. I mean, I think Vanderbilt and New Mexico State are gammies. I think they would have to play terrible football to lose to Vanderbilt, just brutally bad ball. New Mexico State at home, they're one of the worst teams in the FBS. And so that's 7 wins right there, right?
Yeah.
And Louisville is not in the same range. I think they're absolutely a better team than Vanderbilt and New Mexico State, no doubt about it. But still, Kentucky's roster is better. And I know it's a road game and it's a rivalry game, and because of that, I'm not going to sit here and say it's a gimme, but I would absolutely label it as a game that they should win. So there's 8 right there. So really, to me, these next 4 games are the ones that might put the, you know, how good could this thing get? As I sit here today, I mean, I think they can absolutely beat LSU. I mean, I think this is a game that if they're going to do what you're saying, you know, if you're going to get to 10 wins, this is probably a game you need to win. You can get there without it, I guess. But you win this game and you start 6-0, then, I mean, as long as you knock off – that gives you room to, you know, say you lose to Georgia 6-1 and then you don't play great against Mississippi State or Tennessee and you take a loss. As long as you split those games, though, then you're probably looking at 10. So it is a big aspect this week is to take care of business and to get that 6th win. Cause I mean, the month of November, if you go 4-0 and you beat, I don't know, they got a chance to finish strong. If you beat Tennessee and Louisville, Florida all in the same year, I mean, it's something they've not done. Well, that would be huge.
You remember in our preseason picks, I had it 10-2 somehow, and I couldn't even remember how I got there. And then it was, this is the way I had it. 5 wins, then a loss to LSU. If they can get through this one, I certainly think that 10 wins are on the table. And if this program can reach that double-digit win total in the regular season, Derek, that is so different than getting there after a bowl win. Getting there regular season is a huge thing, especially in this league.
Yeah, and it's still, I think, a bit of a hard question. I think it's a great question. I told you that before we even started. I think it's my favorite question in the mailbag. But it's hard to know. I mean, what if they lose to LSU and lose to Mississippi State? And I don't know. There's just a lot of scenarios where you can get to 9 wins, but maybe it's, you know, who you beat. Like, in a lot of ways, beating Florida at home, knocking that off, that's a huge thing to knock down. If you win at Mississippi State for the first time since 2008, that's not going to be a game that gets a ton of play on a national level. But I think for this program to be able to go down there and win a game, I think it would mean something. Not obviously not the same as beating Florida at home, but I think it would mean something to this program. So if you do that and then you beat Tennessee and Louisville, I mean, or even if you lose to Tennessee, you know, like I don't know. Like, I think there's still a lot of scenarios to play out, but when I sit here and look at the schedule now, one, it's hard to believe 5 games are already gone because I'm looking at this and I'm like, man, this is like setting up pretty well for them from, you know, once you get through that Georgia game and you get that reset on that bye week and those final 5 games, I think they're going to go in thinking that they can win all 5 of them. So, I don't know. I'm with you. If they only win 8 at this point, then in my opinion, they would have to lose the next 4 games to get there. You know what I mean?
Wrapping up here, are you at all worried about a letdown Saturday?
No.
You're not?
No.
Coming off an environment like that, I mean, I think having an environment that matches that's going to get them through a possible letdown.
Do you remember when they beat Mississippi State at home, and then the very next week, Kroger Field was packed out for South Carolina, and they were up 24-3. I mean, the crowd. I mean, like, if you give them a reason to show up and be loud and be rowdy, like, I don't see how people, or even people on the team, I don't know how you can't get up to play LSU for the first time here since 2007. I mean, if you were a recruit, I mean, some of these guys on the team were in high school when LSU won the title, and a lot of the guys were in college when LSU won the title. Like, to me, that should be the memory in their mind that you're playing a national championship caliber program this Saturday, and you're favored, and you're the ranked team. Like, you need to come in ready to go, ready to keep building on what you have, because you could have something really special against Georgia the next week. So, no, I would quite frankly be pretty disappointed if there's a lack of energy or things like that. I don't think that's going to be the issue. They might not win, but I don't think it's going to be because they weren't prepared to play.
I know we'll make our predictions on Friday. But in a way, I don't know why, but I could see Kentucky coming out and kind of putting it all together and really actually dominating a game Saturday. I really could see them winning.
That'd be a great sign if they finally did put it all together. I think you got a vulnerable team with LSU.
That's why I think that they could dominate it. I think that you have a team that's kind of spiraling the way Missouri was Saturday against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I think you're getting to a point now to where you're going to see some of these teams, I think, which teams fight through it, which teams fall through it. And I think that LSU is on, and you're getting a vulnerable team coming in that you've got to beat them down. And I think that Kentucky has the guys that they could do that. And if they can make some plays in the passing game, like you were talking about earlier, I think that this could be a game that Kentucky could jump out to a couple scores like they did against Missouri. And you would love to see Kentucky then just bury it and just put somebody away. So it's an opportunity. Every Saturday in this league, Mark Stoops talks about it as another opportunity. You're 5-0, you're 3-0 in the league. Each game gets bigger, especially if you're winning. This one's bigger than Florida now. The one following it is even bigger than those two if you win. So
they beat LSU by a couple touchdowns. I mean, they might be in the top 10 when they get down to Georgia. I mean, that might be a top 10 matchup if they do that. Now, that's getting ahead of ourselves, but I was kind of with you. I was thinking, you know, this is an LSU team. Like, I don't know if Derek Stingley is even back, if he's playing. I mean, Emory, the running back, he's – I academically can't play because like something happened with this class schedule. I think I saw a stat. They're only 8-7 since they won the national title. A lot of that magic from that season is gone. And like on paper to me, this is not a, I mean, it's a good, you know, they got good players. They have some guys and passing the ball, the receivers, Boutte, guys like that who are difference makers. Absolutely. But if you like we were saying, I mean, it feels to me like a program that might be close to quitting on their coach, quitting on kind of what they have. And you, in some ways, you could kind of be the death knell for Ed Orgeron.
I think you got to win it, honestly. I think you put it up there. It's a chance to, I mean, a statement made would be huge if they can beat Florida, LSU back to back weeks. That's a big time deal. Go on a 4-game, or actually, it would be. Would it be a 5-game SEC win streak if you go back to the South Carolina game ending last season? So they've got a chance here to really continue making some moves in this league, and that's how you do it. But that wraps up the mailbag. Thank you all so much for submitting questions. I know we put it out on short notice. I didn't get it out on Sunday. We put that thing out at maybe around 11 o'clock this morning, had a full mailbag. We appreciate that. But most of all, this episode is powered by Blue Wire Pods, and it's also powered by the Butcher's Pub. 3 locations, Palmville, Williamsburg, London, Kentucky. You can visit thebutcherspub.com or check them out on Facebook. He's Derek Terry. I'm Sean Smith. We'll catch you next time on Kentucky Daily.